Hey everybody, welcome to the Balance Boss Podcast. I am your host, Lauren Zoller, and today's guest is Laura Day. New York Times bestselling author Laura Day has spent nearly four decades helping individuals, organizations, and companies harness and develop their innate intuitive abilities to create profound change. Newsweek magazine calls her the $10,000 a month psychic, adding, when business people need a crystal ball, they turn to consultant Laura Day. The Independent dubbed her the Psychic of Wall Street. A-list Hollywood stars and Wall Street executives praise her ability to predict future events, including the 2008 recession, with astounding accuracy. As Brad Pitt has said, I believe in the gut and I believe in Laura Day. Laura's work has helped demystify intuition and bring it into the mainstream. In her workshops and presentations, she demonstrates the practical, verifiable, and sometimes astonishing uses of intuition in the fields of business, science, medicine, and personal growth. Laura has trained thousands of people and companies to use their brains, perceptions, and sixth sense in effective ways to realize their goals. She is the author of six best-selling books and has been featured in publications that include Newsweek, New York Magazine, The Independent, Bottom Line, Cosmopolitan, Marie Claire, Stella, Forbes, and People. She has appeared on numerous TV networks and programs, including CNN, Fox News, Good Morning America, The View, Extra, and The Oprah Winfrey Show. I am so excited to have Laura on the show today. She has been a huge catalyst in helping me shift back into where I am as a coach and showing up in the world in my true authentic nature. Without further ado, let's jump right in.
Welcome to the Balanced Boss Podcast, where we discuss how to live abundantly in all areas of your life. Here is your host and work-life balance coach, Lauren Zoller.
Laura, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited to have you here. So we always start the Balance Boss Podcast. I do the same thing every time I have a guest on the show because it's always different. And I think it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. But I start with an intention setting. So I'm actually going to let you set the intention for how you want the listeners to feel as they listen to our conversation today, or what you would like for them to take away as a result of our interview today.
Okay, that sounds wonderful. I'm not going to do feeling because feelings change. You eat a cookie, your feelings change. I'm going to do intention. And my intention for our guest today is that this allows them to find and implement the opportunities that are available in the situation we're living now.
So powerful. Love it so much. So tell us a little. I know that we're going to dive in deep to your story. But you have been called the Psychic of Wall Street, which I think is incredible. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are now and how that title became part of who you are?
Sure. I mean, I actually don't think of that as who I am. I started in the early 80s, back when universities were doing a lot of testing on the extended capacities of the human mind, or in popular lingo, psychic skills. So can the human brain predict the future? Can the human brain see what's going on in the human body at a distance? Can the human brain remote view? And I started out as a test subject in my very, very early 20s. And I was at an advantage since really I was bored and 20 and I had nothing to prove. I didn't come from an esoteric bent, I came from a scientific family. So I was really happy to be a test subject and really didn't care which way the pendulum swung. What happened was that even though they had promised anonymity, one of the experiments was televised and I had this instant following and I didn't even really have a name for what I did. Because I come from such a dysfunctional family. Everyone is very science-based, but everyone's also, as my son says, batshit crazy. I really was not at all attracted to the more esoteric of the intuitive slash psychic world. So I started working with companies, and the way that I really, just by being opened, I was trained. You know, a drug company would say, well, can you predict the effectiveness of this drug in a 1,000 patient sampling at these dosages and the side effects. And I'd said, well, I don't know, but I'm happy to try. So I don't know, but I'm happy to try. And I later learned a better expression for that, trained me. And the better expression is the good scientist suspends disbelief and runs the experiment anyway. So I spent a lot of my 20s predicting the future for companies and doing corporate spying using intuitive skills. And I also worked a lot with individuals just because it was an easy way for me to relate. I'd come out of a very traumatic childhood and ones that my siblings did not survive. You know, two of my siblings have committed suicide, as well as my mother. And it was, I had a language that kind of made me have a place, even though I was a bit of a weirdo. So I had to do individuals, but then I realized that when I was doing individuals, I was often the only voice in their life. Whereas a company, I'm part of a team. You know, I do something very different than anyone else does because I do it without any information, but I'm part of a team. So I there's only so much damage I can do. Whereas in an individual's life, they may not have a family or a therapist or even a friend. I can be the only voice. And so I really moved away from doing that. Also, I had priced myself out of a normal market. The only people who could afford me just because of supply and demand were the very wealthy. So one of the things that I did do when I stopped doing sessions for individuals, and I was making more than enough working for companies, and doing much less work, is I started reading for free in workshops. So, and most of my workshops actually are free. So as I train people and as they learn to read themselves and each other, I would also read them. And for me, that's a gift because it keeps me honest when you read publicly and people can see you make the occasional, hopefully only occasional mistake. It really demystifies it because this is a simple capacity of the human mind and human beings are just amazing creatures, but nothing's 100%. And I think that one of the things that has always put me off about the new age in general, whether it's psychics or healers or whatever, is that, you know, I'm the Guru Maharaji Boo Boo, and it's very dangerous because everybody is powerful. The thing about the psychic of Wall Street came because I publicly predicted the market crash back in 2008. I publicly predicted the crash a couple weeks before it happened when everyone thought, no, this is a bull market and, you know, you're crazy. And even my investment person said, no, don't. I called her, said, I'm selling everything. Don't sell everything. She's still my investment person. So that was, there was a record of it. So all of a sudden I became the psychic of Wall Street. The reality is I can only take one company from every, I can only take one entertainment company and one investment company and one drug company, because otherwise I'm helping people compete against each other.
Right.
So Wall Street is always only one of my companies. And I've really had the same companies for decades. I have one mobile space just to keep it a little different for me. But what I love to do is create communities, because intuition does allow you to tell a complete stranger who you've never met what the next great thing coming for them is, or the next obstacle, and help them prepare in the moment. And intuition does allow us to hold each other, to help each other, to even have conversations with each other remotely. It allows us to reset our intentions and our energy in a way that seems to almost magically, although it's not magic, create a reality for us. And when we do this in community, we really, we empower each other. And my experience, it's funny, at the beginning of the pandemic, I put aside a couple thousand dollars for people, you know, in need, because people reach out to me. And I sent out in my newsletter, I said, you know, anyone who needs groceries or medicine or, you know, let me know, because I have a fund. I received so many more offers of more money that wasn't needed than I did. people want to give, and we've somehow engineered a society where that natural desire to give, whether it's a company giving or individuals to one another, where there's really no format for that. And that surprised me, by the way. I didn't expect it. I expected, you know, my husband said, are you sure this is smart? You know, you're going to be inundated with requests, and are you going to be financially able to meet them? That was not the case. I was inundated with people who said, yeah, I have an extra few thousand, let me know who needs what. I'm like, no, that's not what I was saying. Do you? and it really showed something lovely. And of course, my group self-selects. They're all pretty porous. They feel each other. They, you know, intuition does make you feel someone else's pain as your own, which is why I routinely have psychotherapists come on to teach psychic self, to, you know, how to set boundaries and grounding, which I am terrible at. I mean, I will, you know, take home anyone off the street and feed them. So it really became a career. And then when I got pregnant, which my son is now 28 and married, I used to think I had to travel for work. But then I had a baby and I lost half my blood giving birth. So I was really, left my husband during my pregnancy. So I was really in a mess. And a process came through me that had come to me in pieces called The Circle, which is my fourth book. And I started writing books that were workshops to teach people to do this. My first one was a New York Times bestseller. And it, once again, was not the first book I'd written. The Circle really was the first process I'd used. But I used the process to write Practical Intuition, which became a bestseller. And then I had this other career, and clearly also couldn't be in the closet with it because they put my photograph, I was young, then they put my photograph on every book. So I didn't walk into a bookstore for 10 years. So that's the story of my work. And I feel so privileged that my pathology, my inability to be separate, my brain damage has become this wonderful career that I enjoy, that is very profitable, but that also allows me to have something to give my community, which of course gives me a place in my community. And what is better really than having a place in a community?
It's so true. It's so true. Wow. That's such an inspiring journey you've been on. You've been on so much growth and expansion and really helping people find, you know, what it is that makes sense intuitively, either for their life, but also for their business. But I'm interested in knowing too, because a lot of the people that listen to the Balance Boss podcast are entrepreneurs. They too are in the coaching realm, or they're consultants, and or they have, you know, corporate companies where they're utilizing coaching and consulting as part of their growth as a company. And I think what's so interesting to highlight right now is that we are in this space of crisis, quote unquote. There, and the name just keeps getting used over and over. I keep hearing it in everything in the news and in conversations with current clients that we're in this state of crisis. So I'm interested in knowing from you your response to crisis, because something that I picked up from what you said and when you were telling us about your journey is that you've been able intuitively to really see crisis before it happens. And I think that crisis really is a part of growth and a part of being a business owner, owning a business and growing. So can you give us your take on the different type, like there's, I know that you talk about having four different crisis response types. Can you talk a little bit about how to approach crisis from a business setting and then also in life?
Sure. Those are a lot of questions together. So I'm going to prioritize them in my head for my ADD here. I train a lot of coaches and I go into companies and train companies. And one of the things that I train them to do is to have a filing system where whatever you're dealing with is the lesson plan, but that you have a goal. Because I think, and goals need to be flexible. companies also, interestingly enough, I have found have crisis types. So the four types are denial, rage, anxiety, and depression. And to put it in very simple terms, they're companies and people who respond to everything aggressively. There are companies and people who filter out what's distracting, but who all often respond to crisis by just doing something else and not dealing with it. There are people and companies that just endure, but that tend, when things go wrong, to let things pile up. And then there are people and companies that are overly reactive, and often the anxiety types that often miss what's actually going on to hyper-focus on what they're afraid of. So it, for individuals, and as you listen to me, I think that you can identify yourself. You are only one type, and you're the same type that you were in nursery school. I go into nursery school classes, and I see, wow, okay, here's an anger, here's an anxiety, here's a depression. And the simple example is, when you were in nursery school and someone stole your crayons, did you hit them over the head and get into big trouble even though they had done the wrong? Did you sit there frozen asking everyone, did they really steal my crayons? Did they really steal my crayons? And thinking, I will never draw again. And getting yourself in such a state that you actually weren't able to notice that there was another pile of crayons right beside you. Did you, when someone stole your crayons, did you say, oh, well, you know, that was bound to happen anyway, and just sit there and ignore all the other wonderful games or the ability to tell the teacher and get your crayons back? Or did someone steal your crayons and say, oh, well, I really didn't care anyway, and you sat there unable to draw? And perhaps, you know, did something else, never finishing that wonderful picture that you were drawing for your parents. Those are the four types. And you know, they all have gifts. If you're a rage type, you tend to make more problems for yourself in crisis because you're impulsive and you act out. If you discharge some of that energy and take a beat, and what I don't want to mystify discharge, do 20 push-ups. You know, run in place, do something that discharges your charge. The gift of rage is passion. And that goes for companies too. You know, the can-do of rage can do when they're not reactively making more trouble for themselves. With anxiety, when something happens, and anxiety types, you know yourselves because you get frozen and you seek reassurance. You're the people who go to psychics who've been wrong all the time, but still you go to them because you just want to be reassured in that moment to deal with the anxiety. You never find one who can accurately predict because you're looking at all the possible things that can happen that will never happen, but you're ignoring what is happening. The gift of anxiety is that awareness, is that ability to be aware of everything that could and is and would happen. They're the intuitives. And so anxiety types, if you can employ denial usefully by organizing your sock drawer or, you know, doing something that has a finite ending that's a can do, then that hyper awareness shows you every opportunity and you just become a superstar for yourself, your company, for everybody. Denial types, they, you know, things happen and they denial. I wrote a book called Welcome to Your Crisis. I guarantee not a single denial type ever bought that book for themselves. They buy it. and denial types, the problem is they're the last person to see something happening because they distract from discomfort. When you can really recognize yourself as a denial type, you know that more than working out three times a week, what you need to do is every 3 hours, look at a cat video or look at a commercial that makes you cry. You need to reconnect to emotion, you know, with kind of a prosthetic experience so that you can connect to reality, because that same ability denial types that distracts you from what what's going on also allows you to be hyper effective in a way no other type can, because you are able to filter the distress. So it's finding that balance. And depression types, you know, depression types are important for every organization, because depression types are the ones, and once again, this is you in crisis, depression types are the ones who have that gift of depth. They can find all the components because they're the only one down there low enough to see what that whole base looks like. Their gift is depth. But depression types, when they know that they are having a crisis response, which they know because they don't care, that there's nothing to do anyway, it's hopeless, they're exhausted, they can't move, they probably don't even want to listen to me finish the sentence. What they need to do is do a tiny effort towards self-support and ask for some tiny gift of support from others. Because the minute that they can do that, they're the ones who say, oh, by the way, yes, this all this has happened, but here's that one thing that we need to do that I can see that you can't, because they have the depth. So those are the types, and I found organizations have type, and we all are all four of the types when we're functioning well. But crisis by definition is when what is happening floods our ability to cope. I frankly prefer a full-blown crisis to the crisis that a lot of people and companies have, which are the throbbing low-grade disappointment, the throbbing low-grade underperforming, where we're managing things enough, we're employing intuition enough that it never becomes a full-blown crisis, but we're also not dealing with the issue. And so we're basically treading water. And I, you know, in Welcome to Your Crisis, I do say welcome your crisis. A, it's here already. If you're in crisis, you're in crisis. But begin to look for the opportunity, because we both as companies and as individuals and in relationship, we spend 99% of our energy holding on to our market share, holding on to what is. And the guarantee is what is going to change. And when we're able to engage our type and engage the superpower of our type, because every pathology has its potential, when we can engage our type to, with discipline and determination, address the small disappointments, the little teeny dampness before it becomes a flood, then we have a winning system.
Amazing. That's incredible. And so nice to know that there, I mean, I'm a firm believer, and I preach this all the time, that really the greatest growth comes from being able to honor crisis and know that it's going to be a part of the evolutionary journey. I'm interested in knowing two things. Is there, because there in the crisis types that you outlined, I noticed that there were parts of the way that I react to crisis that I could identify with each type. Is there ever a crossover of different types within the way that a crisis appears, or is it primarily you are focused as one type every time you're in crisis?
So when you're flooded, when you're reactive, you are one type. We are all types all the time, but in crisis, we regress. So we regress to what we were in nursery school, and that is always one type, and it's always the same type. And people often confuse their types. You know, an anxiety type can look angry because they tolerate, and then they're chihuahuas, you know, not for hours and hours. A lot of female anxiety types identify as rage types. But what I do, and I have these free on lauraday.com on my website, the thing that really does type you, there's a test in the book, which is great, but if you don't want to buy the book, I'm not selling you a book, you can go on my website, and there are free audio experiences, and I don't call them meditations, because you're not supposed to go anywhere, you have to stay present, but they're free audio experiences for each type, and the cure that works for you is usually an accurate definition of your type. You're not, and once again, we all employ everything. I mean, when a denial type can learn to experience their anxiety, they become a well-balanced denial type. When a depression type can learn not to turn their rage inward, but to take informed action, they're a very well-balanced depression type. When an anger type is able to take a beat, discharge the energy, and get the fullness of the situation, they are a well-managed rage type. You know, I always forget one. Oh, when an anxiety type can say, yes, this is happening, it's going to ruin my life, I'm going to end up eating cat food in this old person, I'm going to lose everything I've ever... When they can distract, when they can deny long enough to settle in, boy, they're a well-balanced anxiety type, but you are only one type. And one of the things I did, I've always done a lot of pro bono work for drug companies who employ, you know, many neurologists and psychiatrists, for psychiatrists, especially in pediatrics, for their patients. I never do a diagnosis, obviously. I'm not qualified, but I've done so much free work in neurology and medicine and pharmacology that with Welcome to Your Crisis, one of the things I did is the book came to me intuitively. I downloaded it. I tried it out on people, but I also vetted it through so many different psychiatrists, neurologists, psychologists. I called in favors. Mm-hmm. And because when you're in crisis, and this is the important thing to know about crisis, whether you're an individual or a company, is when you're in crisis, you don't have the bandwidth for a lot of mistakes. You need to have something that works. You need to engage whatever discipline you can to employ it, and that will bring you to the opportunity. And you see that now in COVID times. You know, for a lot of people, this has been devastating. And for a lot of people and companies, this has been, you know, revelatory and profitable. There is no bad market. You just need to be on the right side of it. And that's where intuition comes in, because each crisis type, each person has their own intuitive style. And the intuition, you know, I train intuition a lot of different ways. I train coaches to be more intuitive, CEOs to be more intuitive. And then I train them to both get the data in a way they can confirm it and to, in a sense, reset their automatic pilot so they simply make right decisions. Hmm. But for individuals, it's the process called The Circle, which is my fourth book, is a good process because you have a goal, but you put your intuition on automatic pilot. So, and there is a methodology to doing that, the most important thing of which is to have a goal and to have a commitment to act in your absolute best interest. But the example I always use of putting intuition on automatic pilot was, I live right near the World Trade Center, and I have since I was 23 years old. And I, right before 9/11, if I had seen planes hit a building and my whole neighborhood go up in flames and the death and the destruction, I would have needed good psych meds. I would not, as an anxiety type, have been able to respond. But that's not what happened. Because I engage in a process that always has intuition guiding me without my having to be aware of it, my family and I did this fun thing. We said, you know what? just like in LA, like we should have bug out bags and we should be prepared for an apocalypse because you never know, it could happen. So in this very lighthearted way, for a few weeks before 9/11, we ordered duct tape, air filters. I took a lot of money and cash out of the bank, bottles of water. I went to my father's office. My father's a doctor. I went to my father's office and I took a whole bunch of masks and protective gear. Because, you know, the doctor's offices have, it's disposable. They have so much of it. We did all of these things, like saying, okay, if an apocalypse ever happens, great. I dropped my son off at school that morning. I got out of the subway and I saw a plane hit the building. And I thought, okay, this is what I prepared for. I went home. I duct taped my windows. I turned on my air filters. I gave out masks, I distributed cash, I lived between two schools, I was completely calm. I left my son at school in Brooklyn because I thought terrorists are never gonna think of Brooklyn. Now Brooklyn's hot, but in 01, no one was gonna do anything to Brooklyn. So I said, okay, let me take care of my friend's children who I was between a high school and a nursery school. I was completely calm and completely prepared and I had it. Everything I needed, cash, mass, water to distribute to my community. And then I went and got my son and we weren't allowed to go back to our house for a month. But that's the best use of intuition, where it becomes something where it's not constantly alerting you in a way that's disorganizing, but it's keeping you on track, even though we know tracks change directions all the time. And that's what I train coaches to do for their clients and companies to do, is to find that automatic pilot. That's not what I do in my career. My job is to predict the future mostly and corporate spying. That's what I do. But how I engage it in my life is very different because I don't want a ticker tape of everything I need to prepare for that could, you know, that's going to happen. I just want to prepare for it and enjoy my food. And I always tell people, you know, when people say, oh my God, can you change the future? It's like, if you couldn't change the future, I'd be out of business and B, I'd retire. Because you are creating the future now. Now, you as a business and you as an individual and you as a coach, you can't always change what goes on outside of you, but you can change where you are in relation to it. So one of the things I'm telling, because I'm doing a free workshop basically every other night for my students, for anyone who wants to come, and I'm doing them mostly on IG Live, and one of the things I tell them is, we know what's happening, we know the problems, let's focus on the can do. And I'm not big on positive thinking, because positive thinking just means if a bullet's coming at you, it's going to hit you. Because if you're thinking positive and you don't get out of the way and do something, you're done for. Negative thinking, all you're seeing are the obstacles. So that's all you can create. Empowered, realistic thinking, which is, this is where I am now. May not be where I want to be, but this is where I am now. Here is my goal. And now, how do I engage intuition, intellect, my community, my emotions? How do I engage everything to create a new reality for myself? And that's where we all are right now. You know, this is what's happening, and we can do something with it.
Yeah, it's so true. And it's being able to take that forward action, even though we are in crisis, or if for most of us think that we're, you know, in this state of crisis. So, Lauren, I'm interested in knowing.
Aren't in crisis right now. Like, I'm not in crisis right now.
Right.
Aren't in crisis right now. And a lot of people are getting acknowledgement for a crisis they've been in every day. You know, when we have issues, I remember the first person in a group who said, well, I'm having trouble getting food. And I'm saying, well, now you know how most of America lives. You know, it's for a lot of people, this is a crisis. But for a lot of people, this is also an opportunity. As an introvert, being able to stay at home in my little London flat with my husband and teach online, which I've never done before, has been revelatory, you know. And I know that we can all find the opportunities here. It's definitely exposing how our social net is not available to many people, and how it's needed. It's exposing how important, like, I remember when I was little, I was born in 1959, so I'm older than a lot of your people listening. I remember we knew the officer on the beat. We knew the man who picked up our trash, and we loved to see the big machine grind it up. We knew the person who mopped our floors. We knew our delivery person and our mail man, it was at the time. We knew them by name, and they knew us, and they cared for us, and they, you know, stopped us if we said a bad word. And we're really realizing that nobody, no human being is expendable, and our society has to reflect that. And I think that, and our key workers now are, you know, what would we have done without them? And this is an opportunity that I hope doesn't go away, to acknowledge that all of us have an important job.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting too, that you said that, you know, there are a lot of people that are not in crisis right now. And I, you know, I completely agree with that. I say that really, when it comes to everything that's happening right now, it's a decision as to whether or not you want to pivot and allow this to be a crisis, or do you want to work through it and allow it to be an opportunity for you? So I think it's beautiful that you highlighted that. And I'm interested in knowing, because you spoke previously about boundaries being one of the difficult things that you struggle with in regards to intuitive work. But what do you do to balance and make sure that you stay full while you're taking on so much energy from, you know, other clients? And if you're working with businesses, what do you do to make sure that you stay grounded in your own practice so that you can stay full yourself?
Well, my intuitive work, because really that was my defense as a child. It's the thing that saved my life as opposed to my siblings. I was lucky my brain was structured in a certain way for it. So that doesn't take a lot out of me, but what does take a lot out of me is that when I am in a group, I can feel everybody. I don't know often what other people know, what I know, what's appropriate to say. I often overdo in a way that I have trouble coming into my own body again. I struggle remembering things like to eat, but I'm very lucky in that I have, first of all, my students. I train intuitives. So if I'm not eating, I'll get an email from one of my thousands of students, or usually from about 50 of my thousands of students, saying, eat a sandwich. I mean, literally. Student goes, eat a sandwich, and they'll be right. I will have forgotten to eat all day. I also find I have a wonderful husband, and there is nothing like someone's arms around you to put you back in your body. I also find that routine for everybody is very grounding, but I especially need routine. Everyone has been saying, oh, you're so generous to do these free workshops every other day. I'm like, that's my grounding. I'm doing it. There's a lot of research on remote healing, and when I use healing a lot, when I teach, I make myself part of the group as well as teaching the group. So I get a lot of healing from my students. I also use things, you know, I find that doing things like writing or drawing, I'm a terrible artist, but things where you can see what's going on inside of you are very grounding. There are also ways that many people can get in touch with their intuition. I use a lot of ritual. Ritual is an element of the system I use called the circle. And ritual is a way that you implement new habits to replace old habits that keep an old reality in place. So I do a lot of ritual, whether the ritual is sitting down to a proper meal every night, or I do some funky fun ones with my students, like we do a healing and candle ritual on the full moon and the new moon. I have so many things, physical activity. Now I can't escape my trainer. times a week for half an hour, and I'm doing yoga online twice a week, and they can track you down. And I think that we underuse our communities, and I'm very fortunate that both with my clients, my students, and my friends, many of whom are all the same, I live in a community. They value what I have to offer, and they compensate for my significant deficits. I mean, I've had my home since I was 23, and I'm 61 in New York. I leave my home and two blocks away, I'm lost, because the same brain damage that allows me to be so porous intuitively and move around in time and space also does not make me that effective in certain human ways. And I think that, you know, when you look at, I see intuitives, because, you know, I try out intuitives, and I see intuitives, and I, you know, they're living subsistence lives. And that's one thing I don't let my students do. I refer clients, and I will not let them not charge a fair wage. But I see a lot of intuitives who are very good intuitives, but their lives are not good because they're not grounded enough to implement. And the fact of the matter is, intuition gives you lots of information, and there's lots of research. We can measure the brain now. We can see that your brain reacts to a photograph that a computer will randomly generate in the future. So everybody's precognitive. You know, we can now really convincingly demonstrate that telepathy and precognition and remote healing all exist, because now we see what the brain does. But we all have lots of information. The real question, and it's the question the circle addresses, is how do we implement this information in a way that creates what it is we want to create? And that, for your listeners, for every company I go into, for every student I work with, I always say, what is your goal? When we do a telepathy exercise, don't just get in touch. What is your goal? And be adaptable enough to allow that goal to transform, not to give it up and walk away from it, but to allow it to transform. Because I've found in working with companies, especially for 40 years, rigidity means you break. Plasticity is so much more useful than strength, because strong things break, plastic things bend. So you want to have some body to you, you know, because you need that to move forward, but you need to be able to adapt. And I see this with individuals in their love lives, you know, people who you think, oh my God, this person is so lovable. Why are they not accompanied by someone fabulous? And then you see, A, that they have patterns where they don't even see the opportunities to connect with someone fabulous because their patterns are so ingrained. But you also see that they have a rigid idea. And so they have blind spots. They don't see what they don't see because they won't allow their idea to adapt, or they can't allow their idea to adapt in response to circumstance. So it's just, I love what I do, and people recharge me. And I think, you know, we all think we have to be so complete as companies, as people, as coaches. Everything's fallible. And when you have a community, sure, different elements will let you down. But once again, if you stick with what you are getting, what you can do, how you can have an effect, you really allow yourself. Sometimes you carry, sometimes you're carried. And it's very, I think it's really, community is my superpower. We moved to London in August, and I have a huge community here now. You know, there's always a table where we've been doing socially distanced dinners, but there's always a table I'm invited to, and there are always new people who show up at mine, 6 feet apart, wearing masks. But and it's, I think that is a real superpower, is the, and intuition shows you that we're always in community anyway, because if you look at the research on intuition, we are deeply, deeply interconnected. And it's okay to protect your turf. I think people feel like you either have to be generous, I'm without ego, I give to all, which by the way, is a psychiatric diagnosis, or they have to like protect their market share and what they're doing. And there is a middle ground, and that middle ground is that grounding.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Laura, thank you so much for sharing so much incredible information with all of us today. I know that there's so much that you've shared that's not just going to help me, but it's going to help the people that are listening as well. Can you take a moment before we wrap up for today and give a little bit of information on where people can find you? And then also if they're interested in taking advantage of what it is that you have to offer, what you have coming up next?
Sure, I'd love to. My lauraday.com, lauraday.com. I'm the only one who looks at my email because people email me such private things. So please get in touch. I post on Laura Day Intuit at Instagram, lots of free workshops all the time. I do a training a couple times a year. And I really do love, I love to teach. But lauraday.com is probably the best place. And Laura Day Intuit on Instagram, Laura Day Circle on YouTube, Laura Day Circle on Facebook. I'm new to social media. My kids got me on it, but I'm really I'm really enjoying it. And they're also, I'm not the only intuitive. It is a group of intuitives, and some of them are quite skilled, quite well known. But even beginners, intuition is something that we all are capable of. It's a very quick switch that we can flip, as is healing, the ability to direct energy to create change. And we do this in community all of the time. So I really encourage people to try their skills on, especially on Instagram. Everyone does readings every day.
I love it. I love it. Laura, thank you so much. It was such an honor to have you here and to hear your wisdom. Thank you so much for sharing it with us. Hopefully we can have you on the show again soon.
I would love it. I'd love to do one on healing. Oh, and by the way, I've written 6 books that are workshops. I don't know why I forget the book.
Are they all on your website?
I think they are all on my website. But Practical Intuition was my first. But the Circle is the system that I really live by. You know, the Circle is the thing that kind of puts you on automatic pilot, although it's written in somewhat esoteric language because that's what the publisher wanted, but it's a very solid system. Thank you so much for sharing your space with me.
Yes, thank you, Laura.